once the most venerated newspaper in the world until certain Mr. Rupert Murdoch got his talons stuck into it, tried to cut with almost 1,000 words in its editorial yesterday. South Africa needs another enlightened leader like Nelson Mandela, it started, but it keeps selecting imitations of Robert Mugabe. President Cyril Ramaphosa confirmed recently that his government plans to expropriate private property without compensation, following the examples of Zimbabwe and Venezuela. Now, I don't have to go on and read the rest of the editorial share with you that it was a wake-up call indeed. It's the most circulated newspaper in America. It was a tad lazy and I think reductionist. It failed to grasp some of the nuance of our land debate and issues, but that's the challenge, I think, and one of the key problems. To discuss the land issue tonight, let's welcome tonight's panel. I was hoping to have Human Settlements MEC in Gauteng, Dikgang Moyiwa, on the panel tonight. We're struggling to get hold of him. So Raymond Parsons, next up, professor at the Northwest University School of Business and Governance and a special policy advisor to Business Unity South Africa. Raymond, good to see you again.
Yes, and let me say good evening. And I do not have a connection with, you know, with WUSA anymore. I'll just make that clear.
And also on the line is Busi Mavuso, Chief Operations Officer and Board Member of Business Leadership South Africa. Busi, welcome.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for inviting me.
And in studio, Lorenzo Montanari, Executive Director of the Property Rights Alliance. Lorenzo, welcome.
Welcome, everyone. Thank you.
And we've also got Sari Libby, the author of the International Property Rights Index, which launches tomorrow. Sari, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Raymond, reading an editorial like that, and I thought you might now be advising Busa again just because of the land issue. reading an editorial like that, probably the world's most, one of the world's most influential newspapers, what goes through your mind?
Well, I think let me start by saying that I do not think it's correct to say that Cyril Ramaphosa is a Robert Mugabe in the making. We're not dealing with someone like that. Obviously, a leader from an influential journal like the Wall Street Journal, which is negative, is not good news. And we've got to take that on board as part of the global perceptions around the debate about the land issue. And having said that, when we talk about the political debate and the economic debate on this issue, we've got some facts, we've got some fears, we've got some suspicions. But within that, I'd just like to make one or two points by way of starting our discussion. I think we all agreed, we're on the same page, we need land reform in South Africa. I don't think there's any disagreement on that. We need it for our inclusive economic development, we need it for our political stability, and for strengthening our democracy. I think that's accepted. So let's not argue about that. I think the issue is really that the anger of populism, which we seem to be riding at the moment, we must be equally able to ride the solutions. And that's where we've got to be realistic and we've got to be constructive. And certainly the second point I'd like to make is that we are focusing on the Constitution, but I must say there seems to be a consensus that's not really where the problem is, that what has gone wrong with our land, you know, reform in the last few years has simply been we haven't done it, we haven't exercised the powers we already have to be able to do so, and that we haven't implemented what we said we would do. And then finally, coming back to the economic and the investment implications, I think that one of the big challenges is that this debate, from the investor point of view, is seeing not that this is political, that this is political pragmatism, but rather that it's a response to pressure. It's actually a sign of weakness. And that it deepens uncertainty among investors at the very time when we are wanting to revitalize the economy, get employment up, get out of the low growth trap. So the whole impact or emphasis which our president has put on investment, that's absolutely correct. But then we've got to resolve some of these inner contradictions which are neutralizing some of the positive efforts we want to make, and which we intend making in order to turn this economy around. So this is where we are. And I think that the investor sentiment has become a very important factor in our ability to either be able to turn this economy around or not. And unless we put the whole debate about land onto a much more constructive basis, we're not going to be able to succeed in getting our breakout of this low growth trap and all the other good things that we want to actually come with it.
Raven, thanks for that opening. Busi, to come to Business Leadership South Africa's position on this, I was speaking to Maria Ramos, the CEO of ABSA, last night, and she remains fairly sanguine that more clearly defining the conditions under which property can be expropriated without compensation would actually support economic growth by providing greater clarity, greater certainty. But unfortunately, managing that message with the genie firmly out of the bottle is proving almost impossible for the ANC-led government right now, as we see with international op-eds like that which was published in the Wall Street Journal yesterday. What is BLSA's position?
So I let me just first say I absolutely so agree with Maria's sentiments, but I also agree with Professor Raymond Parson's sentiments. And we fully align with what he has articulated, you know. And this is where we normally get frustrated as business, that there is this notion within this ANC-led government of walking left and talking right. So if the focus at the moment in this country is ensuring that we bring foreign direct investment into the country to enable economic growth, well, such articulations are not helping in terms of ensuring that there is policy certainty. So we are concerned that if indeed there's going to be any amendment to the Constitution to allow for expropriation without compensation, this will result in an erosion of property rights. And I think once you start touching the issues of amending the Constitution and therefore the Bill of Rights, which is sacrosanct, then really where do you stop? How long is the piece of string? And I think also that this is a huge misdiagnosis in our view, because the ANC is now scratching where it doesn't itch. The response to these challenges, you know, that we're facing in the country today and in terms of implementing land reform, as the prof says, has got absolutely nothing to do with whether the Constitution allows us to be able to do that or not. The issue has been the ANC's failure in doing what they were supposed to do, really their lethargy in having implemented and dealt with this issue effectively. If you look at the fact that over the past 24 years, only 7% of the land has been restituted, you know, it tells you that, you know, we are not really dealing with a constitutional failure here. We are just dealing with an administration failure. So to date, the state has failed to adequately make use of the expropriation powers contained in the legislation. So therefore, what we need to fix is our administration and not the amendments of the Constitution, because the Constitution is not a barrier to effective land reform. Rather, the slow pace of land reform is rather attributable to other factors, you know, which, as I've said, is a political will, lack, and the utilization of the legislative tools that are currently available.
I would like just add a very quick point. I could play the devil's advocate and also say, look, maybe if you tweak the Constitution, you might perhaps generate more certainty for investors and the markets. I can buy that argument. But in South Africa, unfortunately, the so-called nuanced approach is in a climate of such low trust and confidence that no one believes that this tweaking of the Constitution is not going to have all sorts of unintended consequences. So once again, when you say what are the options to deal with this in a constructive way, bear in mind you are operating in a climate of very low trust and very low confidence, and it's important therefore to whatever you say about nuancing, what messages you then send out are very important in deciding what the reaction of markets and business are around the issues of how much confidence and trust do you have in the ability to tweak in such a way as to create more certainty.
And surely by now, when the motion was passed in Nazareth back in December, it's almost 8 months later, we would have some form of draft example of how we could further tighten and improve the Constitution. The fact that we haven't seen anything as yet just aids and abets that uncertainty. Lorenzo, the Property Rights Alliance is it's an affiliate of Americans for Tax Reform. It's an advocacy organization for all kinds of property, intellectual property. And I think in South Africa we forget that if you want to attract capital, you need security of tenure over all kinds of property. How is this debate playing out from a global vantage point?
Well, thank you for the invitation. Property Rights Alliance, we advocate all over the world for the protection of property right and intellectual property right, but also for a strengthening of the rule of law, judicial independence, and also we measure with our index the control of corruption. So we focus also on the legal and political aspect of the property right. And we think that the bottom line of our message is property right is the only way to create economic growth and get rid of people from poverty. So property right are the backbone of any free market economics. And I think that there is a data that has always struck me at only 13% of the people all over the world are living in a country where property rights are strong. So this means that it's time to expand property right protection, not to remove property right. So without jumping in the debate of the Article 25, I'm not from South Africa, so I'm speaking with all respect of the South African government and about the debate, but I think that if we want to create economic growth, if we want to expand social justice, we need to protect property rights. We don't need to remove Article 25.
And what we're seeing, sorry, at the moment from the index that you compile, would we sit within the 13% or the 87%? Where do we as South Africa currently stand in the global pecking order? Without giving away tomorrow's launch.
Yes, I was saying that I cannot give you the exact place, but unfortunately it's not in the top 13. And I hope in the future this would be the case of South Africa too. So yes, property rights are the backbone of a wealthy, healthy, and in a growing economy. So we have to remember that when we speak about human rights, we speak of something more of ownership of thing. It's related to what we call values and principle of appropriation of individual liberty and the ability to promote prosperity and real virtuous circle and economy. So we are talking about people. We are not talking about things when we are promoting the respect of property rights.
And we don't need to look too much further than what's happened in Zimbabwe over the last three decades to see what happens when the security of property rights aren't respected. It's often invoked as an example of what goes wrong when you open the genie of populism, Raymond. This genie is now out the bottle. The public hearings have been held all across the country. There is now an almost insatiable demand for land from the rank and file, from people who have been in attendance. I've watched in absolute amazement. I don't know how the ANC now manages those expectations.
Well, I think what's important now is to channel this energy into some very constructive solutions. I think that's really where one would hope it might have been had it not preempted all these discussions. But you know, there's a book by Ethel Fugard written many years ago about apartheid, and the title I always thought was a very important test to apply. The title was that people are living there, and when we talk about property rights, we want inclusive property rights because we want people to live there and use their property rights or to gain property rights in order to have wealth creation. I mean, that's really what we want. And I think we're all on the same page as far as that's concerned. But we mustn't do it in such a way that it's either I have property rights or you have property rights. We want to make a win-win situation around property rights. And so there are in South Africa both, there's a debate about property rights and about property wrongs. And that's the balance we've got to find, and that's the challenge, because this is probably one of the most important debates we've had in South Africa in the past few decades.
Property wrongs, Raymond, I love your turn of phrase sometimes. Boosie, when it comes to title deed, that's the important component here. If government can't handle title deeds in Alex, what of the rest of the country? I'm not filled with a lot of confidence here.
I had muted myself. So you see, this then goes to show that what we're dealing with here, it's not the inadequacy of the constitution. You know, it's really an administration issue, and we need to face that. So if you, so the president's articulation in as far as this is concerned, where he was saying that every Friday is going to be title deed Friday in Soweto or whatever the case is in the township. Now, that was the correct way in which to start dealing with this issue. So now, if the ANC is failing to currently do that, you know, or to have done that within the past 24 years, it goes to show, you know, what is the kind of issues that we're currently dealing with in terms of the lack of administration. Now, if you look at how insufficiently capacitated is the Ministry of Land Reform, you know, from a resource perspective, from a budgetary perspective, and so forth and so forth. Those are the things that we need to be fixing. I don't know why we are jumping to amending the Constitution, because that is not where the problem is. And I hear them saying that our frustration and our concern at the moment is that if the diagnosis of what the problem is and how to solve it is going to be a hit and miss, then, you know, we're dealing with a seriously bigger problem here. Because if they haven't understood that the reason why we're sitting where we're sitting in as far as the land reform policy is concerned is because of their inefficiency versus the constitutional adequacy. You know, then the issue that we're dealing with is really a bigger issue. Now, if they are going to go to amend the Constitution, what is it that they're amending about the Constitution? Because Section 25 allows you to effect land reform the way it's supposed to be effected.
That is the million dollar or the million rand question, I think, BC, which we still don't have an answer for. But Lorenzo, I'd like to come back to you because your organization works quite closely with a very well-recognized international example of what can be achieved in the Hernando de Soto option. You work very closely with the Institute for Liberty and Democracy over there in Lima in Peru. What can we learn from the de Soto option in South Africa?
Well, thank you for the question. We are very proud to work with Dr. Hernando de Soto, as we are very proud to work with the Free Market Foundation led by Leo Lon and Jason Yurba here in South Africa. Well, the Peru is could be a great, great example. If you remember, in the early 90s, Peru was devastated by the guerrilla terrorist group, Sendero Luminoso. And Hernando de Soto, he understood perfectly that the only way to win the battle against terrorism, against the communist guerrilla, was to reform the economy. So Hernando de Soto, in part with the, he was able to advise the government, the Peruvian government, in order to implement a reform of more than 93 laws in favor of a property right. So they were able at the time to legalize more than 360,000 informal entrepreneurs, informal firms, in order to produce more than 500,000 jobs. This was the turning point, the way Peru was able to defeat the communist guerrilla and was able to recreate wealth and to distribute wealth among the poor people. So this is the reason that, as Professor Sari Livica said, property rights are human rights, as are enriched in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, Article 17 and Article 27 of the United Nations. This is a very clear, have to be very, very clear, this message. Property rights are mainly for poor people. Is every time the enemy of property rights, they try to reframe the debate, explain the property rights are for rich people, is not true. Property rights are the basic right for the poor people. It's the only way to get rid of poverty, the only way to create economic growth, the only way to create economic freedom in each country all over the world. Europe, for example, when you are mentioning before the intellectual property right, and there's something that if we abolish the Article 25, what's going to happen with intellectual property rights protection? Think about the European Union. 45% of the GDP is related to IP-intense industry. More than 50 million jobs are created thanks to the IP industry. So IP, like a property right in general, are the back, as I mentioned before, are the most important thing and backbone for the to create wealth. There is no other way to create wealth. Socialism failed, and it will fail over and over again.
That is a message that one cannot amplify enough. It's actually crazy that we have to be amplifying that when we have such stark reminders of the failure of socialism in the form of Venezuela and Zimbabwe and trying to roll back decades of such failed policies. Raymond, where to from here, though? We're reaching the end of our time, and the big question still seems to be unanswered, because we've got an ANC along with its alliance partners in this, other parties and in agreement that the constitution is going to be amended. So who gets the land? Let's take us to a point where we've amended the constitution now. Who actually gets the land? Who gets to decide? I mean, we haven't really thought much further than this.
Well, I think one of the problems is exactly that. Who will decide? Will it be the government of the day saying, this is what will belong to you and this is what will belong to you and so forth? When do you pay compensation? When do you not pay compensation? I mean, these are all still unanswered questions. But I just want to correct the impression that we've suddenly woken up to this problem. I want to remind us that we've discussed before that report of that high-level panel, which was chaired by a previous president, Motlanthe, which went over this ground, and it's all about the assessment of key legislation, I'm reading its title, and the acceleration of fundamental change. And they identified the land problem as a very important issue where we had failed to implement what we'd said we would do, and that a lot of the problems around the issue of land reform arose from that failure, and they made very specific and very constructive recommendations as to how we ought to address it without having to tamper with the Constitution. Because they themselves said, look, this will have all sorts of unintended consequences, but it's not necessary. You have the powers, there are things you can do that we need to catch up with what we had failed to do. And I think that's where we are now. And the question is, can we channel all this anger and all this energy into more constructive channels? It's not too late. At the moment, of course, it's heavily political. We have to understand that. That's a reality. But that's also why we look for a political leadership which will help us to address these issues, to navigate these tensions, and to get us to a more constructive outcome, because quite clearly this is an issue on which we need to develop more consensus. It's a very testing issue, and it's not going to go away. So, I mean, we're going to have to work together in order to find those solutions. But if we don't handle it properly, instead of worrying about how we get new investment, we may have to worry about a capital outflow if we don't handle this matter correctly. So, I mean, that is the challenge that it then jeopardizes, because there are other policies that also relate to your whole economic performance, breaking out of the low growth trap, increasing job creation and so forth. So I think we've really got to get a handle on this, and we're going to have to look for very constructive leadership to turn this debate into constructive channels, so that instead of having a win-lose situation, we can turn it into much more of a win-win situation. Because at the end of the day, it's market perceptions and investor perceptions that matter, not the nuances that we like as elitists to play. We're not running a seminar, we're running a country, and there are realities here that need to be managed.
And those realities, those expectations, as I referred to earlier, are raging. They are burning red hot. If you attend any of those public hearings on land reform, there has been an expectation created. Busi, on the note of solution seeking and for leadership in this space, what sort of role do you see Business Leadership South Africa playing at this stage to ensure that we use this opportunity that has collectively focused the minds of South Africa on the land issue to have an outcome that will unlock a wave of economic potential? Is that possible, or do you think the horse has already bolted?
No, we don't think that the horse has already bolted. I think we probably maybe also need to remind ourselves, and I don't know how much comfort we need to take in the fact that the president's announcement last week was the ANC's position. So it doesn't mean that the current process that we're undergoing, you know, by the review committee has stopped. I mean, just as recent as Saturday, the review committee continues to have these public consultations. So I think we are really hoping that sanity is going to prevail at the end of this. So the ANC's submission, you know, is but one of many submissions that are going to go into this whole process. And it's unfortunate that the president's pronouncement has actually made and created this confusion that it has created, because he's head of state first before he's ANC president. And I think that is how this whole thing is being viewed. So I think in what is, we're hoping that what should therefore come out of this review committee is really sanity in terms of, you know, what really needs to be done. And I think in terms of the process that the review committee needs to look at in exercising judgment at the end of all of this is to really put the country first, you know, and not go by the populist decisions. I think, I don't know if we realize as South Africa and as a country how much in terms of how much of a crossroads we are in, you know, and there is a lot of focus in the country at the moment in terms of the articulations that we're making, the positions that we're making, and I think that is going to have to reign supreme above everything else. And I'm just hoping that we just need to maybe trust the process and hope that sanity will prevail in terms of what comes out of the review committee.
Thanks. Boosie, Raymond?
Just a last word. We're not at a crossroad. We're at a T-junction. And either we're going to take the high road or the low road, depending on the decisions we take on a crucial issue like the issue of land reform and bringing everyone into the system.
Lorenzo, just one final comment. You're launching the index tomorrow, I believe.
Yes,
where is that going to take
tomorrow, 8:30 a.m., we are launching the 2018 International Property Index at the Holiday Inn Rosebank. So
that was
Professor Sari Levi-Crescente, she will share tomorrow the key findings of the index. So fantastic. Tomorrow, everyone in South Africa will discover what is the position of South Africa in our index.
As we know, we are not in the top 13, unfortunately. We're in that unlucky Australia, number 87. That was Lorenzo Montanari, Executive Director of the Property Rights Alliance, who is joined by Boosie Mavuso, Chief Operations Officer of BLSA, and Raymond Parsons, well-known economist and author, and a professor at the Northwest University School of Business and Governance.